Okay, thank you, Sophie. Okay, so good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for taking the time out to join us in this investor meeting today. We'll try and give you an update on what has happened in the over the last 12 months and give you some perspective in terms of what is our thinking as far as the next 12 months goes. Normally, we would have done the Q&A in a more interactive manner. As you know, when we're sitting in a hall or standing in a hall, we encourage you to ask the questions right on the slide itself, but that might be logistically a tad difficult to achieve, right? So for today's meeting, what we're going to do is I'll have to go through the presentation, right? And then at the end of the presentation, we'll take the questions. There are already, I think, 7 people who have logged in and said that they'd like to ask some questions. And so we'll, you know, right after the presentation, we'll go to those 7 people, all right? So thank you and welcome once again. The structure of the presentation is similar to what we have normally. So, you know, what is our mission and vision? What are we trying to accomplish as a company? Performance summary by category. This will be basically on the similar. The data there is all Q2 data, right? However, I'll try and give a perspective on it in a little more detail as compared to when we do the normal quarterly call, and give you some thinking, therefore, of how we see it planning out. Comparative update. As you know, we don't subscribe to Nielsen or such data, retail databases. However, we do present to you once a year the share of spends, right? So we'll be presenting you to the share of spends and the relative spend data, which we pick up from the media agencies in terms of what is the rate card spending. The actual spending by any company could be less. It's unlikely to be more. And the amount that it could be less would be dependent on the scale of the company and the amount of media that they are buying. Okay, but broadly, it's good enough to give a perspective and an indicator as we've seen in the past. We'll then come on to current status, therefore, where are we today and what's working for us and, you know, how do we see us building on this. And then we've identified 5 core strategy category groups, if you will, in terms of the food business. And we will take you through the strategy for each of the category groups. And finally, a summary of what we see going forward. So what is our mission and vision? Our mission and vision is to become the best performing, the most respected food company in India. When we laid out this vision about a decade ago, we were pretty much an oils company, as all of you are aware. 98% of our revenues and about that in terms of gross margin came from the oils business. And it seemed like a far cry at that point in time for us to transform ourselves from an edible oil business, a vegetable oil business, into a food business. Because as we know, there aren't too many companies across the world which have actually successfully managed to do this. But the great thing is, I think a decade on, we are looking on being pretty much able to accomplish this task. When we started the year, we had indicated to you that, you know, we'll probably end with a food's revenues this year of about between 325 and 350 crores. And looking at where we were at the end of quarter two and where we are even right now at the end of 2 months of quarter three, I think we're pretty much going to be in that ballpark, probably on the higher end rather than the lower end. Looking at it's a great business because as we started to build up scale, get operating leverage, our margins have also improved. And, you know, with a margin which is north of 30% on that business after manufacturing overhead and before manufacturing overhead in the region of about 45% or so, it means it's a nice business to have. It's a sustainable, profitable business. We always required a food business which is going to be sustainable on its own. It couldn't have been funded by some other businesses, which in any case is not a good idea because sooner or later it catches up with you. But we wanted a great, sustainable, profitable food business, and I think we're pretty much there and on our way now into a different phase of our transformation. So coming to the performance summary by category, we'll now go into each of the 6 categories that we compete in, the 5 food categories and the 1 edible oils business, right? So we'll provide and give you some detailed perspective on that. Ready-to-cook snacks, as you all saw at the end of quarter two, we were up about more than 50% in both volume and value. And it's clear that the rise in in-home consumption has given a clear lift, right? With about a 50% growth in year-to-date volumes. As compared to when we exited quarter four, and of course quarter four exit includes the fact that, you know, in the last 7 to 8, 10 days, there was really a full lockdown. But nevertheless, it was in the 20s at that point in time. And therefore, you know, certainly there has been an amount of elevated in-home consumption. And it, as we mentioned to you earlier, both in our quarter one call and in our quarter two call, it's very important that we continue to invest behind this business so that we can continue to grow the business, right? Otherwise, this one-time consumption will come in and then go out and it will be in our base and then, you know, we still have to grow on that business. So it is very important for us to maintain our spending. And today we'll have the opportunity to share with you exactly what we spent and how we spent it. In our ready-to-cook business, we also include the sweet corn business, which is a business that we launched only last year. So it's about maybe 16, 18 months ago. And that contributed to about 400 basis points of revenue growth for the ready-to-cook segment. And we'll talk to you a little more as we go forward about what more we intend to do with ready-to-cook while we leverage what we've got, right, rather than making huge capital investments to enter new categories. And we've tried to ensure that we have a sustained media presence. This was required in our view to A, protect share, because whenever a category gets a huge amount of traction, and 50% growth is a, you know, fairly significant growth and attractive to a lot of other players who would like to come in, you do need to ensure that you're on air and you're acquiring, you're protecting share, and also that you are acquiring new consumers to support the post-pandemic policy, because it's a matter of time before the pandemic hopefully gets addressed and, you know, the vaccines are found and, you know, life becomes more normal. At that point in time, we'd still like to keep acquiring new consumers so the post-pandemic volumes can be delivered, right? This is a pretty important piece, and it's true for all, I would say, food companies or any companies which benefited from a significant amount of in-home consumption, a part of which is really a one-time effect. And that needs to be carved out, and we need to be clear about it in terms of our budgets and our preparation for next year. The next category group that we have is ready-to-eat snacks. As you saw at the end of quarter two, our gap versus the prior year was narrowed. We saw much improved supplies during quarter two. In quarter one, we really made a choice. We wanted to focus on ready-to-cook popcorn and peanut butter, which are really the two categories that we've effectively built in India. And we therefore diverted whatever available manufacturing labor resources to be able to meet those significantly higher volumes. We fortunately had the manufacturing capacities, but there was a redeployment of labor that was required, right? And as we informed you, we also took the opportunity of some of that growth that we were getting on ready-to-cook and on peanut butter, and the short supply that we had on, on ready-to-eat snacks, out-of-home consumption, we took that opportunity to change our go-to-market. So I've already outlined that to you, but I'll just try and go into a little more detail. So basically, most FMCG companies like ours follow a standard model, which is you know, you ship from your plants to your warehouses, and then from the warehouses they get shipped to distributors. At the commodity end of the market, in edible oil, absolute commodity, where you work on wafer thin margins, that is not the practice, because the margin profile of the business doesn't allow you to ship first to the warehouse, then incur the unloading at the warehouse, and then again the loading at the warehouse, right? You need to really ship it direct from market, from the factory. And this would also be true, I think, for the largest of FMCG companies who have sufficient volume in their plants to be able to ship direct to the customer. This is, for example, not unusual. It's not unique to India either. So I give you an example. Frito-Lay in India has plants virtually in every state. And every plant makes every product, right? Every plant makes every product. And the reason for that is you need to be able to ship the customer a full load containing of all the products that you as a company want to deliver. And that gives you the least amount of incremental cost that there is in your supply chain. So on all the 5 rupee packs of savory snacks, starting July, we moved it. As we informed you, we changed our go-to-market. This is pretty much consistent with all the bottom, all the 5 rupees bag snacks players. Mostly they will only rely on full truckloads, if you will. And we are shipping now to a significant number of customers across the country on a full truckload basis. And with the starting up of Chittoor, we are able to penetrate much deeper into the south. So places like Tamil Nadu and Karnataka, and even parts of Kerala, where we were unable to, it wasn't making cost-effective sense for us. And with the startup of Unnao, which will happen during the course of this month of December, we will also be able to do a similar exercise across UP and large parts of North India. So this was an important pillar in our getting our business model right for bag snacks. the older business model of shipping, especially for the bottom end, was not going to work, particularly, you know, for the small packs, right? The 5 rupee packs, and to an extent for the 10 rupee packs, because there's not only the freight costs and the hamali charges, there is also the damages that you incur because stock is lying around and you may not get your forecasting absolutely right. So one of the advantages, therefore, of shipping direct is that it eliminates also the risk of forecasting errors by customer, by warehouse. And therefore, we see ourselves returning to growth very much within the current year itself, right? With the settling in of the new go-to-market, we obviously would have, some customers wouldn't have bought immediately because they said, no, I can't take a full truckload. It takes some time to get them on board. Most of them are coming on board now. And therefore, the settling in of this new go-to-market and commencement of both the Chittoor and the Unnao plant, as I mentioned a little earlier. Right. In terms of spread, we continue to see a very, very solid growth in the spread business. As we mentioned to you, our assessment, okay, and we could be wrong or not exactly precise on this one. Our assessment is that on the spread business, there was some negative, there was some headwinds in terms of the fact that, you know, some of the consumption that was going for gyms or protein through protein intake would have been impacted because, as we all know, a large number of gyms such places, extra heavy exercise places, are actually closed. But also, we would have benefited to some extent from in-home consumption rising because there are more people staying at home, so somebody might just walk into the kitchen, pick up a spoon of peanut butter, even without bread or with bread, and therefore, on balance, we think that our growth rates were net not affected by the pandemic. In other words, there was a negative charge, there was a positive charge, and the net impact of that is zero. And therefore, we continue to grow our base peanut butter at about 20%, right, which is kind of the range that we were in already. In addition, we got another 400 basis points from cocoa and chocolate spread. Now, that's important because coconut is one of those products that we launched last year where we said that we are going to leverage our strong manufacturing capabilities and our strong distribution capabilities to be able to enter new categories, offer great products with a very, very strong value, and improve our profitability because since those products are all being made in our own plants and being distributed through an existing distribution system, so we reduce the cost of distribution, we are able to benefit in multiple ways. In other words, we get growth, but we also get profitable growth, which is a challenge for a lot of companies today, right? Because it's easy to be able to say, okay, if you have the reserves, if you have the financial and the P&L, you can say, okay, let me spend 50 crores on this category or 100 crores on this category. But it finally has to be profitable, right? Because if it isn't, then at some point in time, the size of book that you are carrying in terms of that new business, which you're supporting from the old business, becomes so large that the old business can't afford that bleeding. And the net result is then you go into a permanent, if you will, stagnation as far as profitability is concerned. For us also, I think the acceptance of Sunrock as a chocolate brand was a very big leap, right? We used to have these conversations in the early days when we launched peanut butter. Will consumers accept an edible oil as peanut butter? And they did. But chocolate is much, much further, right? But it's worked. The fact that we have chosen to invest all our resources behind peanut butter means that the distribution of Sunrock peanut butter today is much wider than that of Sunrock edible oils. In other words, more people know of Sunrock as peanut butter today than they would as an edible oil, right? Of course, there'll be a large number who know it as an oil. But the increasing preponderance of people, particularly of the younger generation, who are the consumers of the future, will know Sunrock equally as a peanut butter, probably more as a peanut butter brand. And that's great, because the leap from peanut butter to chocolate is a lot easier to make than, say, if you were to come in from straight from an edible oil to a chocolate, right? There are many reasons why we didn't pursue continued investments in edible oils. I'll come to that a little later. But one of the other things also, always at the back of our mind, was the more we can spend on food, the more the imagery of our brand will get associated with food. And that will be much, much better for us to go into higher value categories, right? Because at the end of the day, we don't want to be a commodity staple company. We don't want to be a single commodity player. We need to be a player where we are adding value in our manufacturing processes and we are selling products which consumers are willing to pay us a reasonable price for, right? So I think that part is gone well. And I think the last one, obviously, we've talked about it earlier. We mentioned to you 2 years ago that the combined nut and seed-based spread category along with chocolate spreads about 2 years ago, I think had gotten to the same size as jam, right? And today, I think our estimate is that in FY21, probably jams and nut butters will be about the same size. So in other words, in just about a decade or so, the nut-based spreads category, which we are the drivers of, has become equal to and possibly will become therefore larger than jams, right? And that explains why some of our larger competitors have gotten into peanut butter, right? Because the category they are competing in is going nowhere. It's going to decline, right? We mentioned to you earlier, the jams category probably growing in very low single digit rate, right? Whereas peanut butter and nuts were going at about 18-20%. So it's only a matter of time, therefore, that these categories become larger. And if you continue to play only in the declining categories, which are not categories of the future, then really speaking, your business actually also will not have a future, right? So this is a big milestone, and you know, we will, this is our best estimate as of now. Next year we'll get to know roughly, you know, we'll update it with our latest estimates at that point in time. But it's a great position because it reinforces the fact that if you do right things, you can build large categories. None of us could have imagined that peanut butter and nut-based spreads will be larger than jam. I mean, if you had asked any one of us 10 years ago, we would have said, you know, really? I mean, that seems like a bit of a stretch, right? But it's real. It's there today. And it's great, right? So that's as far as spreads is concerned. In terms of breakfast cereals, we've had very strong acceptance of both extruded center-filled cereals and our honey roasted oats. They're both doing very well, which is basically a granola. And they are adding to growth of about 150-odd basis points to our total food business. Right? We are significantly outperforming our major competitors in the category in terms of product quality. And when I say significant, I mean significant. You should, if you are in the food business and studying food, try our products one day. Try our granola and compare it with, let's say, a Kellogg's granola or a Nestle granola. And try our center-filled cereal Sundrop Pops and compare it with a Kellogg's Choco Fills or a Nestle Cocoa, whatever. And have a look and you make the call. So we are making great products, right? And the beauty about making great products and making them from our own plants, it's not third party, it's all made at our own plants, right? Is that the more we ship up there, the more efficient we become our manufacturing, the more we get operating leverage, and the better our overall margins become, right? So it is not that we have set up unique plants for breakfast cereals, right? They are part of other plants, and those plants make other things like extruded snacks and, you know, a large variety of products. And as we are able to push more of these products out, the operating cost, the percentage manufacturing cost across the entire plant comes down. And when that comes down, then you know it's a double win because these are profitable businesses, right? You can make 20-25% even in the early days without too much of, you know, if you will, you know, aggressive pricing. And you at this point in time, we actually have no incremental cost because our distribution cost is fixed, our manufacturing cost is fixed. And then as these categories grow to 20, 25, 30 crores, they'll produce enough money on their own for us to start putting advertising money behind it. And that's great because a large number of these categories means we have a lot of good growth coming. In addition to the core growth that in any case we are getting today from ready-to-cook popcorn and peanut butter. Okay, so I think this part is going well, and I'll share with you. You see from the competitive spend how what has happened after we have entered these categories, what has actually happened to the nature of our competitive spending. Okay. The next one is obviously the most recent category that we've gotten, but a big one. I would not be surprised if in the coming years, an increasing share of our valuation actually comes as a company will come from chocolate confectionery. Because it's a large category and it's a profitable category. As one of my friends who used to work with Frito-Lay and subsequently worked with Mondelez told me in very, very nice terms, he said, you know, Sachin, he says the thing is that in the US, salty snacks have a better margin profile as compared to chocolates, right? Because the salty snack profile of the category was set and determined by Frito-Lay, whereas chocolates remained reasonably competitive, right? There was Hershey's, M&M's, and a whole lot of other products. I said, in Asia, actually, it's the other way around. Chocolates have a much better margin profile, and salty snacks actually have a lower margin profile. That doesn't mean it's an unprofitable business. It just means that this is the way the categories have developed, right? And so we've actually, it's added to some amount of growth, but we've actually gone a little slowly the last 6 months because we also wanted to understand. And, you know, this was going to be actually our first summer, effectively. because we launched just after summer last year, and we wanted to go through at least one winter and one summer to fully understand it. And there were a lot of learnings with this, right? Both through the summer and the monsoon period, right? Because it is a new category for us. Some of us have experience in the category, but every product is different and you need to configure your supply chain accordingly. So we've completed now 12 months in the category. The learnings from last summer are being incorporated into our product price architecture and into our supply chain practices. So when I say supply chain practices, I mean, what temperature do we need to keep our warehouses up to what temperature can we ship without it being a temperature controlled? How long can it be outside a temperature controlled warehouses? These are all the dynamics of managing a chocolate business, right? And I think we've cracked most of the learnings on this one. And we are therefore from a supply chain and from a product price architecture perspective, we have learned whatever we needed to learn. You never learn everything that you need to learn, but we've learned enough for us to know that we've got a clear winner here. So what is product price architecture means? It means which products do we need at what price point? What should be the weight of those products? What should be the packaging configuration of those products? How many should be there? What do we want at 5 rupees? What do we want at 10 rupees? What do we want at 20 rupees? What do we want at 50 rupees, 90 rupees, 175 rupees? We need to have all these products at these price points and the architecture of those very clear. And we've done most of that learning. And I would say we are therefore now in an advanced stage of actually executing those changes as we go along. And you'll start to see that. For example, we've launched a 90 rupees chocolate pack, which is doing very well, right? And we are also making some changes to our 10. We will be making some changes to our 10 rupee offering. We've tried also an assortment pack over this Diwali, very small volume. And, we've sold in small volumes. We checked the offtake, which is reasonably good. And, we just pick up whatever stock is excess so that we have a comprehensive learning about how to manage assortment. Assortment is probably the most difficult part of managing confectionery, but if we get it right in the first season itself, it will be awesome, right? The great news is that we have a strong success of the current products. Some of you would have tried our products, Sandhav Coconut Duo. That's the one which has the photograph there. It's a very good product. It's well accepted by consumers. And I think it supports what we wanted to say and do was that the chocolate business in India, and all of you are reasonably familiar with Nestle and because you track it, but you don't really track Mondelez, right? So because you're not a listed company, so there's less for you to invest your time for. There's less return. But it is important for us as a manufacturer, right, to understand the entire comparative space. The chocolate confectionery business in India is largely shaped by Cadbury and to a lesser extent with Nestle. Nestle entered in the late 80s, if you will, right? Well, but Cadbury's is in their pre-independence. And therefore, even the offerings that are there in India are shaped by the global offerings of these companies, right? And that also, their active offerings very often. So, for example, Cadbury has Fuse today. Fuse was a product that existed in Cadbury England many years ago, 20 years ago probably. But they discontinued it in England. So they never thought about launching it until Snickers launched. And then, you saw they launched Fuse, which they're spending a lot of money on. But so to come back to the core point, the chocolates that we consume are dictated by the heritage of the two chocolate companies in India, namely Cadbury and to some extent Nestle, and more recently Ferrero, right? Ferrero came in, they created the toy segment, right? Which is about, 1,500 odd crores, right? So our thinking always was, what are the products that we can bring into India where they are not the core strengths of these people, right? So, and which are largely actually the products which are sold by the US multinationals, right? So that is to a large extent Hershey's and Mars, right? That's why we told you earlier that we would also bring in a peanut butter and chocolate, which we actually tested this Diwali, and then we're just doing some minor tweaks, and again we'll make it available. So our read is it won't be as big as the coconut one, right? That is also why, for example, when Mars launched, they launched the Snickers, right? So it's not that Cadbury's couldn't have launched Snickers. They could have launched a Snickers type product because they had it in the portfolio, but it wasn't active in the UK. And I guess that could be one reason why they didn't launch it, right? So our thinking is, how do we come in with unmet consumer needs and where we have a right to win, right? So that is why our portfolio creation is quite complex, and I think it's already we're 12 months into it, and probably over the next 6 months we would have completed the job and have a robust portfolio across price points and across different offerings, right? So it's a great category. I think we are very satisfied with what we've accomplished. And you don't have to take our word for it. Actually, if you go and you find the chocolates, because we control the supply very, very tightly, right? We could be selling much more than what we are selling today. But, you know, we also have to make money, and therefore we have to get the configuration right. So we are using this as a time to learn. But if you find some stores which actually sell our coconut duo, ask them how is it moving, and they'll tell you it's tucked out. I mean, you know, it just sells. It comes in and it goes. We control our sales of this product so tightly that the other day, there was a photograph which our sales director, Rikesh, got from the field in Calcutta, where, you know, they had sold in a case of chocolates to a small store. And, you know, so he got upset with them, and he said, you know, but why didn't they, we told you, right? We want that stock to leave the retailer's shop within 2 weeks, best stocks, right? It should reach the consumer and then it should get pulled out. They said, you know, but the retailer is not willing to buy less than a case. He said, you know, less than a case. He said, you know, this is what I need. So that's kind of a idea of how large the market is, and then it shall give you a perspective on, but also I think kind of what we are in the process of cracking. So it's big, it's much better than I expected it to be, and obviously because these are, you know, we took baby steps only into this category last year, but it promises to be a big, big driver for us, right? All right, so edible oils, I think we've seen these numbers earlier. These are pretty much quarter two numbers, and you know, it's in that ballpark sunrock, you know, at a -10, -5. Most of this -5 and -10 is due to the lower end of the business, right? Which is the absolute bottom end of pricing. The more profitable parts of the business have actually done better. But obviously, there has been margin erosion because of commodity prices. And we reported that to you when we gave you the quarter two results. Commodity prices remain stretched. The only good news coming out of that is that the increase has been so huge that many of our competitors have been forced to take price increases after almost 5 years. So after 5 years of pricing, you know, varying only in about 130, 135, 140 rupees per liter, it's gone up finally to about, say, 950 rupees for a 5 liter, so 190 rupees. Still discounted with the promotion, but then what we were attempting to do in the early part of quarter two was actually bring down our prices to be a little more competitive with all the people who were at that 125, 130, Fortune, Sapola, all those brands. And we had to roll back because the commodity prices went up so much. But the good news is that they've all come up, right? So as a consequence, therefore, kind of I think what we wanted to do is in part done by this, and we'll figure it out. There's obviously the margin piece, but then, you know, the business, the share of this of the oils margin today is significantly lower. It's the dominant part of our margin is now coming from food and continues to do so. So we are, I would say, in good shape, right? And we are certainly entering a phase now where because the materiality of oils will be less, it will give us also a little more freedom to do things and certainly ensure that we are able to be in a positive volume and value space going forward. We don't, with at this kind of a margin profile, it's a lot easier to achieve. Okay. So that's it as far as the categories are concerned. We will now get into the comparative update, which is basically the spend shares, and I'll try and walk you through some of these charts. Hopefully, with Zoom, actually, I might be able to do a better job of it than I was able to meet you on a face-to-face basis. Alright. So, first is on snacks. Now, this is total, okay? So, here we've not differentiated ready-to-cook and ready-to-eat because the ready-to-cook delineation or the definition is relatively new to us. So, we'll start to track that, and hopefully, over the next year or so, we'll be able to refine it. Also, Act 2 is a snack. The only thing is, in this space, it's the only in-home consumption snack. That doesn't mean that you don't consume potato chips at home. You do, but it's the only snack that you actually cook, right? And that's reflected in the spend. So as you can see here, basically, we've already spent more than what we spent last year. Actually, in the first half of the year itself, up to by the end of quarter two, we have spent, as you can see here, this figure here, if you can see this, 3.2 crores or plus 1.3 crores. So that's 4.5, and that compares with about 4.1 last year. So by now, we've spent about another crore in October. So we are, I think, gradually headed back. If that would all things go well, we'll be heading back to a kind of spend levels in the region of FY17, FY18. And that's good because, for the last few years, we've been under a lot of pressure on edible oil prices. The only lever that was available to us really was advertising. And we did use it. But it's very good to see now that we are in this kind of a spend, and you know, it will help us to get to that 7 to 8% level that we always talked about. All the other players, actually, if you see, the spending has actually been lower, right? And the reason is clear, that you know, they are all bag snack companies, right? They are focused on bag snack, and out of home consumption did take a beating in the first two quarters, and certainly therefore a lot of them would have pulled back on media, but I expect that they will come back now, right? So that's as far as snack spending is concerned. I think overall good. We committed to you that we keep spending. We both took steps as share and to acquire new consumers. Our P&L also allowed us to do it. And therefore, we are in good shape from an A&P spending as far as snacks is concerned. Now, coming to the next category, which is spread. You can see here, we've again spent more than what we spent last year already. So we spent 1.8 crores in quarter two, 80 lakhs in quarter one, and 60 lakhs in October. So that gives us how much? So about 3.2 crores. So we are well past last year. We are also past all the other years. And I think we are heading towards this kind of a range, which we saw in about 16, 17, something like that. Right? So again, this is good. It's also good for us because we've seen a competitive entry, which is Kisan. Kisan peanut butter spent about 4.1 crores in the month of October. Right, and this is basically only in Tamil Nadu, Kerala, Karnataka, and Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Right, so it's in the South Indian state, and let's see, it's a good amount of spending. And of course, the higher the spending, the more the numbers that you need to achieve in your test market trial. So we'll see how it goes. And but I think we are fine. We are in good fiddle, and we should probably actually benefit from the higher spending in the category more than anything else. So it's in good shape. It remains to be seen, obviously, how this progresses and how Unilever addresses this category. It was obviously necessary for them, because if nut-based spreads are equal to or going to be bigger than jams, then certainly you need to be present in more than one, right? And the four categories are really what? Honey, chocolate spreads, nut butter spreads, and jams. So let's see how it goes. In terms of the other categories, we continue to see spends primarily with Dabur. Dabur continues to be the lead spender in terms of honey, and I think they are in good shape. Probably doing exactly what we are doing. I mean, we are also trying to protect our turf, protecting our moats where we have robust businesses. Keep spending behind those businesses and make sure that your shares and your moats are intact. So it's looking good. Chocolate spreads has seen a bit of a lower. The only company that was spending money was Hershey's. Right, and they spent money, you can see here, 16 crores, 33 crores, close to 40 crores, maybe till by last year, 46 crores they spent, right? And in fact, this is a very important question, which is, you know, there is a lot of belief in a lot of folks who actually study brands and say, well, you know, you need a lot of money to build brands. You do, you need money, but just having money doesn't do the job, right? Because, for example, if... I'm a competitor in one category and I enter another category, right? Just because I have the money to spend doesn't mean the consumer will come to me. The consumer will come to me if I'm offering her or him a better product, or I'm offering a much better value, right? And money is not the only answer. And you can see, we introduced our cocoa nut here, somewhere here, right? And it's a great product. It's priced very well. It's moving very fast. Just last night I was checking it, on the apps, when you do your home order ordering, so you take sites like Milk Basket, Big Basket, etc., Super Daily. Many, there are so many sites you can check now, and mostly they bring you the order, unless there is if you will, equivalent of display mechanism and payment therein. Mostly it will bring to the top the fastest selling SKU, right? And on one yesterday, which we were, I think Milk Basket, we were number one. The number one chocolate spread in the ranking, and took a photo for myself and said that feels good. And in the other one, I think it was Big Basket, probably we were number five. So on average, we were amongst the top two or three spreads in the category. And that's great, right? And that's driven why? Because we have great products, great packaging, great value, right? And we have the brand, right? The combination of these is unstoppable. And what it really does is puts a lot of pressure, because it forces us, even though we don't have the 40-50 crores to spend behind chocolate spreads, and we'll start spending, of course. You'll start to see some amount of chocolate spreads on TV sometime, probably in January, right? Okay, not by itself. So just wait. We'll talk to you in the January when we discuss the quarter three results, right? But it's there, Abhijit, right? So it's not that we are off. We're kind of there. We're visible. We've got the distribution, and we're getting the consumer. So it's a great model, and we're making money, right? Because it's coming out of our existing plants with very little incremental capex, right? Because it's all brownfield. So I would say money is not the only answer. There are enough examples of companies with lots of money who spend lots of money on new products, but none of them turn out to be sustainable, or very few of them turn out to be sustainable. So just keep an eye on this one, and see how it goes. You're also consumers. You watch television. You'll be able to get your own feel of what I'm saying. All right. The next category is breakfast cereals. Now here we see steady category investment by the key players. So Kellogg's continues to invest in Corn Flakes and in Choco, which is their mainline product, but they're also investing heavily in muesli and granola. Nestle launched, as you know, in FY19. They spent about 20 crores. Then they pulled back the product. They've relaunched it. They spent another 15 to 18 crores already, right? And so let's see how it goes. But again, I repeat, the magic formula of the old days of saying, I've got the money, I'll go out and I'll buy an outsourced product, I'll get it made with a third party, and I'll build up the business. We don't think that formula holds good any longer, right? Because there are a lot of agile competitors, including people like us, who have the ability to offer very, very good products. And we get mastery because we make these products ourselves. They go through, I don't know how many months of testing, or sometimes years of testing, right? We make very good products. We make them at extremely attractive prices, right? And it works out well. Because it's also a myth in a country like India, where the co-packing infrastructure is not so well developed in the US. In the US, it works. You can say, you know what, I'll go to a co-packer. His cost of making this product is less than mine, because he's servicing a whole lot of companies, right? And it could work there. But it doesn't work in India, because those scale of co-packers are simply not there, right? And if you put everything else, everything that you want, his cost structure is not going to be too dissimilar from yours, right? Yours with scale is going to be. You just have to wait and persevere, as we've done with peanut butter, right? And also, you will not be able to do the level of innovation that you want, because the innovation that you can drive in your own plant is way ahead of the innovation that you can drive in any third-party plant, right? So we'll have to see how the Nestle place goes. And you can see here, Saffola actually continuing to be spending regularly on oats. Last year, they spent about 45 crores. So assuming a business of about 200 crores, that means 23-24% being spent there on media plus sales promotion, right? So fairly good level of investment. And Quaker also continuing to spend, I would say, on a reasonable basis, again, probably in the 15-20% range. Now, what we were not sure would happen, but it did happen, is that Kellogg actually pulled out of supporting Choco Fills, right? So you can see here, they spent 13 crores in FY18, 20 crores in FY19, and then boom, it went down. 2 crores, and that's it. And they've actually not been investing behind the category in the last 12 months. So this is kind of similar to the Hershey's situation that you see with us, right? With chocolate spread with Hershey's, and our Choco Pops with Kellogg Choco Fills. Both competitors actually being forced to actually cut their spending, because there's no size of price, right? When we have a better product, you offer better value, then actually when you spend money on that product, you're actually helping us. So we're in a happy space, right? So overall, I would say we are in good shape. We intend to take the category, as I said, the 20-25 crore range. And at that point in time, we think it can start to self-sustain a moderate amount of advertising spend, maybe digital initially, and then move on to mass media. Let's see how it goes. Okay. All right. Then on chocolates, this clearly is the largest category. And as you can see, a lot of money, big money being spent. Cadbury would have spent probably in the region of 500 crores last year, Nestle 150, 200 crores. So this is big money. But we don't need to be deterred by the big money. So long, some people will say, but that's a category where people spend so much money. It's true. But if we satisfy an unmet consumer need, which we are doing in the case of our current offering, and we offer at reasonable value, at good value for money, we're going to get the business. Because the consumer wants the innovation. It's just that they don't want the innovation at a ludicrous price. So let's say today a bar of 5-star will be, let's say, 10 grams for 5 rupees. So that's 500 rupees a kilo at consumer price. And you come in and say, now I'm going to give you a lot of innovation, but by the way, it's going to cost you 1500 rupees a kilo. right? And you say, okay, but I'm going to spend a lot of money behind it. The answer is, it's not going to work, right? You may spend money, but the higher your pricing, the more money you need to spend, the less the return that you get. The lower your pricing, the more return that you get on your media, right? And then along comes somebody like us who says, you know what, this is good. This is a great category. We've got a great product and consumers want this product, right? And they want this product and we're there to offer them. And we say, by the way, it's available at the same price as Five Star. It's 500 rupees a kill. I said, give it to me tomorrow. I mean, give it to me right now, right? So that's a big that's a big difference. And then once we get the scale, you know, we will also have the money to be able to start putting money in discrete amounts of advertising, enough to be able to build the business. This is not a pie in the sky, because the fact is, when we started the popcorn business, we didn't have much money. We never had money, right? I remember the first media campaign that I signed off was a test market in West Bengal, right? And I think it was either 12.5 lakhs or 25 lakhs, something. I think probably 12.5 lakhs. So that's all the money that we could afford, right? And today, the popcorn business, ready to cook plus ready to eat, is about a 500 crore category, right? So we are at consumer price. So we've accomplished it. We've accomplished it in the case of peanut butter. So we'll certainly be able to accomplish it in these categories as well, right? That's part of our formula and the algorithm that, you know, we've created, albeit not a high-tech algorithm, but more, you know, a function of working as a team, right? And working with our gut and trusting our gut and going step by step. But it worked. So we're very, very confident actually that we'll do that both in chocolate and in breakfast cereal. And we'll be able to build up nice sized businesses in both these categories. Right? And if you feel no, then you know what, maybe talk to some people who we had talked to when we launched peanut butter. And they say, you know, but peanut butter, who's going to eat peanut butter in India? How will you build a business of peanut butter? You don't have the capability to take on, you know, big companies and spread. But we did. We built a category which those companies are entering today. So the same story is actually going to play out in these categories as well, right? And we're in great shape because the large part of our capex behind all these five categories is done. Some of them with very large capacities, right? The theoretical capacity of our chocolate lines that we've installed, if I take the manufacturer output, now we're nowhere close to the manufacturer output, is, you know, 500 crores plus, right? Probably we could do a couple of hundred, you know, crores. So this is, I think we have the capacities, we have the products now. And we have the distribution system. We don't need to spend too much money. And now we don't have the drag of oil, which is such a large part of our gross margin and was forcing us every time to be able to, you know, limit the amount of investment. With the oil being now at a much manageable share of our total gross margin, the impact of commodity prices, while it will be there, it will not be so dramatic that it can derail our progress. Okay. On oils, as you can see, we took a call and we took this many years ago. We said we will build our food business, which we've done. And as you can see, as over time, as our pricing became high and partly also because of commodity input prices, we actually exited, right? And we've not spent money for it. We had to make a choice, and I think we made the choice. It's the right choice, right? Because no matter how much money we have spent, it would have been very difficult to actually defend the level of pricing that we had, right? So it was, from a P&L perspective, it was the right choice. Funnily enough, there's one trend actually which is appearing now, because if you look here in FY12, the premium category, which was defined as Saffola and us then, because, you know, we were both pretty much reasonable premium to the rest of the players, was about 20 crores. And then, as you can see, Fortune entered. Fortune entered, and gradually Fortune built up. And in fact, then in FY17, Fortune became the largest spender, right? They spent 80 crores on media, and you know, the premium end, which was Saffola and us, was probably spending about 35 crores. So the premium end got delegated to third place, and then Imami entered in FY18, and they spent 121 crores, right? Suddenly the premium end actually got delegated to third place, and that's visible here if you look at the current spending as well, right? Imami in very, very strong first place in terms of spending, followed by Fortune, and then followed by Saffola plus Heart, but Heart is zero, right? So this is an indication of how this category is moving. Now think about, this has happened in the last 5 years. Now think what will happen in the next 5 years, right? Possibly one more player will come in. It's entirely possible, right? Be willing to work at a very low margin, get the scale, use that scale to fund it. But it'll all come at, you know, probably 10% odd margin, right? 10, maybe 8, maybe 6% margin. And that's not true only for India. That's true. We also used to have a oil business in the US, which is now owned by Richardson. In fact, one of our earlier directors is on the board of Richardson, Mike Walter. And it's about a, you know, probably a $300 million business with a 10% gross margin, $30 million. That's what gross margins are on the oils category in the US, right? So India, the US, it's not going to be too dissimilar. That's the way it's going to play out, right? No matter, you know, no matter how much money, or you can, we would be spending a lot of money, but not getting either the margin or the growth, or getting the growth, but not getting the margin, right? So many of you have asked me this question, you know, why don't you spend more money on oils? And the answer is the moats aren't strong enough. The pricing moats aren't strong enough. And there are going to be scale players. Imami didn't exist, right, in the business in FY15, 5 years ago. Today, he's the largest player on the block, the largest spender on the block. Fortune didn't exist. I mean, well, they had Fortune Oils, but they started advertising actually only in FY13, right, with the when they focused on the rice brand promise. And, you know, they are also very large. So I would say this explains to a large extent, or this chart, or the trajectory of this chart explains to a large extent one of the reasons why we felt that it's not a great idea for us as a company to spend on oils, and it's being borne out here. If we were spending, we just have to keep more and more, spend more and more money to sustain the growth rate, and probably a deteriorating percentage margin, right? So so that's on oils. So hopefully you'll find that useful. Right, and it helps to articulate the reason for our position. Okay, so with that, I complete the section on the competitive part, and we'll move on to what is the current status and expectations. Right? I think we are doing okay on time. Hopefully, that should give us adequate time for Q&A. All right. So let's go to the. So I think what makes us unique. We thought about it, and because we need to know it so that we can apply it in all the new things that we do. Right. So I think we are one of the few companies in India that has successfully built to around 500 crore categories at consumer price in India. There are companies that have built categories, but we would be one of the few, I would say. And that we've built not one category, but we built two categories, right? So one is popcorn, which is also in the region of about 500 crores, both ready to cook and ready to eat. And also the peanut nut butter spread category, which we have built. And, you know, it's in that ballpark. I think there'll be very few companies that can actually make this claim. So that reinforces our position that we think we can do a great job in building categories or subcategories in terms of smaller parts of larger category groups. And we can do it profitably, right? That's a very important caveat, right? Because you can say, oh, okay, I built a category. But then, you know, if you built a category that is sucking A&P at the rate of 20% of revenue for media and another 10% or for sales promotion, then is it really going to be a sustainable, profitable position, right? As we've seen with some companies, what happens is when you say, okay, I'm going to build this other business, and you build that business, but then that business becomes so large that the profit from your core business is unable to fund that business any longer, because then the pressure shows on the P&L, right? And I think both these businesses are profitable. We've been consistent. We've told you that you spend 7 to 8% of net sales, and we are, you know, pretty much in that ballpark. We're a tad lower a little bit, but not that much lower now, right? So I think we're certainly demonstrating those capabilities, and we will continue to seed and build new categories while leveraging our manufacturing capabilities to generate profitable growth from existing large categories, right? So we, along the way, we built up significant manufacturing capabilities as well, right, which is the plants that we set up across the country. And we will use these capabilities to enter larger categories, right, and generate profitable growth from those categories. So I'll explain a little later why. Okay. We have a high quality coverage of about 400,000 retail stores. The M stands for 1,000. Huh? Sorry, just in case everybody is not familiar. So we've continually invested in distribution expansion in the last decade. Now our distribution coverage is up from about 60,000 stores to about 400,000 stores. We spend between 50 and 60 crores a year in terms of the actual coverage. And it takes time. Building distribution takes time. It's a very time-intensive process. And that's one of the reasons why even at the times when we came under pressure from an oil margin perspective, and it has happened in the last 2 years, we didn't cut back on the distribution part. We just kept investing there because we said it's much easier to write a check for media, but it's a lot more difficult to actually build up the distribution. That's a lot of physical hard work that is required to actually make it happen. And I think we are now in a very sweet spot between the smaller but the more agile food innovators, which are the smaller companies, right? And the, you know, 150 companies, pro companies, and the less agile but larger food natives, right? We have a nice sweet spot. We can see what is the innovation that is happening at the bottom of the market. We can pick it up. We are agile enough to be able to see it, to be able to modify it to our requirements or innovate on our own and, you know, use our own in-plant capabilities. And we have already a reasonable distribution. Distribution of 400,000, which is close to 500,000 stores, is not a top-of-the-line distribution, but it's a pretty good distribution to get a large part of the weighted consumption of the market. Right? Because the rule also holds good in the market. 30% of stores account for 40%. 40% of stores account for 80% of the consumption. Right? So I think this part is, and you see it happening now. You've already seen it playing out, right? For example, Sweetcorn is a good one. We're just leveraging our distribution expansion and we're building up those capabilities and gaining share. The third point is a unique business model for profitable distribution growth. Now, what do we mean by this? What we want to articulate here is that there are, again, very few examples in India where companies have to been able to blend bagged snack distribution with grocery distribution. So when I say grocery, I don't mean grocery items necessarily, but what I'm saying is that there'll be the products which have a freight profile, which is very, very efficient, right? So as compared to bagged snacks, where the freight profile will be much less efficient because, you know, you're shipping a large amount of air, right? And it's very difficult. A lot of companies have actually tried to do it. Very few people have actually done it profitably, right? Very few, if any, probably have struggled because bagged snacks consume so much space, right? But we think we've kind of got the model right now. And because of this multi-plant model, these bagged snacks plants are able to enable us to give good market access in small towns across the country. Frankly, our entire business in northeast of the country has been built around that, around the plant that we set up in Mangaldoi. And the formula works, right? Because you open distributors, you give them scale, right? But it's a catch because you need to, the capabilities required from an actual physical shipment perspective, from a distributor perspective, the kind of outlets that you need to service to sell a 5 rupee, you really need to go down the line. In grocery, you can be happy with the top 10 stores in the town, in a small town. Right? Those conflicts have to be managed to get everybody to be thinking the way that we are thinking. Right? So we actually have a distribution reach which is well beyond the food turnover. Our food turnover this year, let's assume, is in the region of 325-350 crores. Even at 350 crores is not that large, right? So how do we actually compete with a Unilever in a small town? But the answer is that we do, because with that snack, we are able to give our distributor the tools that he requires for widespread coverage. Right? That market access starts to get to. So it's a tough one. I would say it's extremely tough. A lot of companies have tried, a lot of companies have failed as far as blending it is concerned, right? And I would say we are in this happy space that we finally cracked it. Okay. The fourth point is a high level of innovation driven by our unique organization structure. We have the ability to deliver significantly superior products to competition, as visible in recent launches and breakfast videos. That's clear. You know, you can try the products, you get to know, you know, we are there, right? As one of our directors once mentioned in a board meeting, she said, you know, these breakfast cereals that you have, they're way better than the competition, and those guys are supposed to be breakfast cereal companies globally, but they're not, right? I mean, they're not making great products. So that's a telling statement on what we have by way of product portfolio. And development of products to capture unmet consumer needs in countline projects, chocolate as visible in the recent launch of Duo. So we've launched this coconut Duo, it's done very well. As you know, we've developed it, it's developed here. It's, you know, it's a great product. And frankly, it's worth a lot of money. This development is worth a lot of money, right? For context, neither Nestle nor Cadbury have a coconut-scented chocolate in their portfolio, right? Neither Nestle nor Cadbury, at least what I'm aware of. So, you know, it's a great development for us. It's very valuable. And we're going to see how we actually, are going to leverage this. All right. What are the implications for stakeholders? I think we are one of the fastest growing food businesses in India. If you look at our 10-year record, it's 15% CAGR over the last 10 years through selective entry into fast growing categories. The growth has now further increased to 20%. So what happened was we were growing at about 15% till last year. And of that 15, our math was about 10% was coming from ready to cook and 5% was coming from ready to eat and peanut butter because we added those businesses in. As we had mentioned to you, our expectation from the new products is that they would give us anywhere between a 500 to a 1,000 basis points of growth. Just the three products without chocolates have given us 500 basis points of growth, right? In other words, sweet corn, chocolate spread, and breakfast cereals alone have given us 500 basis points of growth. And that is on an incremental basis. So when I say cereals have given us growth, it's not the value of cereals this year in total. It's the value of breakfast cereals this year, less the value of breakfast cereals that we sold last year. Same thing for sweet corn, same thing for chocolate spread, right? So it is, we are definitely now in that 20% plus range in terms of our organic growth levels. And we'll, you know, therefore, and I would say our, once we crack the chocolate piece, we'll certainly be getting into that 25% to 30% growth rate. So all looking very good. A low A&P model, we've talked about it. Focus on consumer acquisition through strong value for money, lower A&P requirements. That doesn't mean no A&P, it means lower A&P, right? And lower A&P, which is reasonably profitable and self-funded. Which is enabled really by our low-cost capital structure. Our capital structure is way, way lower than most of our competitors. And you can see that for yourself. Our total investment in all the plants and everything else around the country is, you know, under 300 crores, right? Would be our gross block. Net block would be even lower. And if you look at it we have six operating plants here, right? And we are competing in five different categories. So if you look at it and compare it with any of the investments made by any of our competitors, the scale of investments would be much, much more for a similar value of sales. A very customer-focused organization to deliver superior results. We have a near 100% success rate in launch of our new products through continued home visits to test and refine products. This is obviously a challenge right now in the days of COVID. So we're trying to do the best that we can, but there is no substitute for home visits. So we are attempting to do, as I said, what we can via remote, but it's not quite the same thing. But we hope that we can maintain this kind of success rate. We also have one of the highest customer fill rates, reflecting agility and relentless customer focus. One of our consumers does rate all the vendors, vendors means all the CPG companies, both food and non-food. And we are usually in the top three across both food and non-food. We are usually in the top three. I won't give the name of the customer, but we are usually in the top three. And I think there are several occasions when we've actually been the number one supplier to them. And that includes bad snacks, where generally speaking, fill rates on bad snacks are on the low side. They're often in the 60s for many companies. And company clearly at an inflection point in terms of food versus oil. The board approved a new strategic plan for the company in 2007 to drive the transformation from edible oils into a food business. I think we're pretty much there. Strategic food now accounts for more than 50% of our total gross margin, and very soon it will reach the stage where it will cross 50% in turnover. And with oil holding up, not with oil declining, but holding up or growing at a, you know, low single digit rate. And we are clearly at an inflection point, and dominant share of profits will now come from the fast growing food business. Right? Even after I take away whatever is the, you know, what I called a one time increase as a consequence of the pandemic and people staying at home. Okay. So what can you expect from us in the next 12 months? Right? I'm sure you can go back and see what we've done in the last 12 months and compare it with what we told you 12 months ago when we met in Bombay. So you can expect us to seek to do continued sustained investments behind ready-to-cook popcorn and peanut butter. We need to minimize the post-pandemic changes in demand patterns as people go out of home. There are going to be fewer people at home. What impact does that have at consumption? How do we seek to maximize our consumption by continuing to spend behind these categories? The restoration of very strong growth in the RT snacks category. This will happen with the startup of Chittoor and now providing impetus to coverage expansion. And as we are able to replicate our full FTL full truckload model to more and more customers across the country, we'll be in very good shape. Expand distribution and gain scale in new products, which were launched in the back half of FY20. We talked about it, chocolate spread, breakfast cereals and sweet corn. And additionally, enter adjacencies with competitive advantage. So I'll come to that a little later when I talk about strategy by category group. And unlock the success formula for chocolate confectionery. I think the most difficult part we cracked, we have a great product. Now we just need to do the PPA, the product price architecture piece, you know, make all those changes and then be ready so that when the new year starts, we are not, you know, we're not putting on our shoes when the gun is fired at the starting line, we are ready to go and, you know, rock. Right? And use many of the actions forced by the pandemic on operational costs to identify the possible areas of permanent SG&A reduction. Therefore, will for sure be some permanent areas of SG&A reduction. Cost is a big part of our DNA, and we will identify. Obviously, right now, you know, we kept it very, very tight, and At the end of the year, we'll do an assessment. We'll see, okay, what is it? What is it that we need to restore and over what period? And also, what is it that we can treat as a permanent saving into our SGA? Okay. So strategy by four category groups. So here what we've done is we've told you that, in our definition, because this is the way actually the products are stacked in the store. And so this is the way the consumers buy it. Ready to cook popcorn is usually stored with noodles, with pasta, with soups, and now with sweet corn. So the total size of the ready to cook market by this definition, you can apply any definition that you want, and so ready to cook can be articulated in many manners, right? For example, you could argue that all the retorted meals which are sold by Haldiram and Ashirwad and those should also be part of it. The answer probably yes, could be part of it, and maybe we'll revisit this definition as we go forward. But you can see the largest size of it is noodles, which is about 9,000 crore. These are our management estimates for FY21. So, just treat them with a pinch of salt, but I would say they are reasonably, they should be reasonably close. Pasta will be about 2,500 crores. Soups would be about 850 crores. Popcorn at consumer price would be about 350 crores. And sweet corn would be about 80 crores at consumer price, right? So our strategy is really we'll continue to invest in the popcorn category so that we can grow that 350 crore business, right, on a steady state basis to 500 crores and more, right? We will also expand the sweet corn category, and thereby we will gain scale leadership. We have all the rights. You can check our sweet corn offerings on online, and you'll find the offerings are great. They're very attractively priced. They are, as I mentioned to you, for us, sweet corn will be a bit like, say, what honey is. So, Dabur honey would be for a company like Dabur, where it's really the backbone of the super distributor network. We see sweet corn is actually becoming something like that. And it's great efficient, so beyond the point when we need to penetrate rules, so on and so forth, this could be a great product for us, right? And leverage unmet consumer needs, because in sweet corn, people, your options are what? Either you buy frozen corn or you buy fresh corn. Fresh corn is often not of great quality, and frozen corn, there may not even exist a supply chain to be able to deliver that. So our offering here, which is the retorted sweet corn pouch, meets that need and meets it at a very affordable cashing with the right value to the consumer relative to even frozen corn. So we will continue to do that. We intend to enter the top end of the pasta and noodles category by leveraging competitive advantages created by network effects. So I'm not going to say any more about this right now, right? But I will emphasize that in every category we seek to discover, right, what is the competitive advantage that we have, what are the network effects that we can leverage, and if we can do that, can we enter another category? Because there's no point entering other categories if you don't have any either competitive advantage or unmet consumer need. But if you can identify an unmet consumer need and you have competitive advantage, you are certainly going to do exceedingly well. And so we think we've kind of cracked our formula for both pasta and noodles to be entered at the top end. This doesn't mean that we're going to spend a lot of capex or something like that, and we're setting up huge pasta and noodle plants. Just bear with us, and the picture will become clearer probably in quarter four itself, right? So we are very close to being in market, and once we enter, then we will the game plan will be clearer. Until then, I would like to treat that part as confidential, right? But I repeat, with existing capital, existing plants, everything, and we tend to do that. And no entry planned in soups until discovery of competitive advantage. We think we may have found something along the way in terms of long term for the soups business. But again, that's work in progress. It's R&D at this stage. And we're not planning to enter soups the day after tomorrow. The answer is no. But is the answer never? The answer to that is also no. Once we discover the competitive advantage, what we have, we'll certainly be looking at that category. So pretty much you can see we'll start to become a much larger ready-to-cook player. To an extent also that's true for Conagra, meaning Conagra's large part of Conagra's parent company's portfolio, and it's a fantastic portfolio, is around frozen, right? It's around frozen meals, right? Which has done exceedingly well during the time of COVID-19 in the US. And so we will have to find our own formula for how to leverage and capture this market, right? And we'll share more with you about this, right? Okay. In terms of ready to eat Western snacks, this is obviously a huge market. It's about 27,000 crores. Close to 15,000 crores is coming from extruded snacks, 13,000 odd crores from potato, and tortilla chips probably about 180 crores, and ready-to-eat popcorn at about 150 crores. This doesn't mean that ready-to-cook eat popcorn at company price is 150 crores. It will be much lower. It will probably be under, you know, in the region of about 100 crores or so, a little less than that. But it, because the trade margins are very, very high in these categories, in for a large part of ready-to-eat popcorn. But these are the estimates at consumer price. So we will continue to improve supply chain and lower the cost of market access. What do we mean by market access? The primary role of the Western snacks business is to be the conveyor belt of our distribution system, right? Because, you know, this is a large market and we needed one large category where our distributors can have widespread coverage, and accordingly they can carry all of our products, right? And obviously the lower the cost of market access, the wider our region penetration, because the more towns that we can reach along with that snack, right, the wider will be our reach, because the more scale we'll get as compared to, let's say, if we want to have the scale of a $1 billion company, then the food company, right? But you know, with our turnover, right, of food, then we need a category like back snacks, right? Okay, I'm using the term interchangeably, Western snacks and back snacks, but our focus is on Western snacks. So we certainly intend to be a full service Western snack supplier. By that, I mean that we'll actually compete in all the categories. So over the course of the next year or two, you'll probably see us actually with a little presence in potato as well. That doesn't mean that we are making huge capital investments in potato, but it just means that, you know, we would like to have a presence in the category. We will learn from the category and we will nurture this as we go along. Because some of these categories are very tricky, like potato, right? And, you know, because of the high commodity price variation. So we just need to be careful. We think that this category can continue to play the role of giving us market access. And with 6 out of the 7 plants now in place, because the 7th one is in Calcutta, for which we have land, but we haven't initiated construction, lower level of capital deployment is certainly anticipated relative to the past year. But it's an infrastructure that we're going to use very effectively for all the other categories that we compete in. And as we get scale in this, even this will start to become more and more profitable. Okay. Right. So obviously we're at an investment stage, but even this will pay off very, very nicely. Okay. Because we have a well located snacks footprint, if you will. Okay. Spreads and dips. The shelf stable spread market, our estimate is this year will close at about 3,000 crores. Right. You can see the largest part is honey, which will probably close at about 1,800 crores. That's the blue one. Then the brownish one is chocolate. That will probably close at about 250 crores. And jams and nuts and seeds will both close in the region of about 450 crores, we think. Right? So we'll give you more updated figures after the year ends. And, you know, these are estimates, so they are subject to change. But broadly speaking, this is how the categories stack up. We will continue to build the nut and seed-based category. You saw we are investing behind peanut butter. We're going to continue doing that. We'll also introduce other nut variants. So we had mentioned to you that in last year that we would be launching almond butter. And we had said that we're going to take... It's going to take a backseat to chocolate spread, because chocolate spread was a much larger category, and that's correct. But we are ready now also to launch almond butter. So I think during quarter four itself, you should see it in the market in limited distribution, but we would have planted our footprint there. Right? We are also going to now strengthen our presence in and build the chocolate spread category. Right? So it's a small category and it's not really grown. If you see, actually probably at one point in time, chocolate spread was larger than nut butters. If my memory serves me right, and the primary reason is price. It's been priced very, very high, and at about, you know, 1,000 rupees a kilo, 700, 600, 800. You really find it difficult. Consumers don't see value, right? So we think we can do that. We have a distribution footprint. We have the brand. We have a great product. We have an absolutely great product, and you know, you can do the check online if you like as well, and you know, you'll see the same things that I see. And we are very confident that we can grow the category. We will consider an entry into jams and honey only on discovery of unmet consumer needs, so competitive advantage, right? So we have no immediate plan to enter either jams or honey. If we discover that there is some unmet consumer need, there is some competitive advantage that we have, we are happy to look at it, right? But it's not that we're going to say, oh, by the way, now, you know, honey is a large category or jam is a large category. Let's get into it. We'll spend a lot of money. We'll buy this from somebody else outside and we'll put it in the market. It's a recipe for disaster. It's not going to take us anywhere, right? So if we discover an unmet need, we discover competitive advantage and we feel we can be the first, we'll certainly look at that, right? But until then, no. And we also intend to enter and build the nascent dip category. So dips is not in the chart, because actually we're finding it really difficult to get good data about it. Probably it's not such a large business. It will be in the 50 to 100 crore range. A lot of larger players have actually doubled in it. Nestle has doubled in it. We believe we've also doubled in it. And but it's kind of never really grown, demonstrated the potential that probably all these companies had at the time that they launched their product. We think, again, it's a category that we can grow, right? And in some of the dips, not in all, but in some of them, the value proposition being given by the current competitors is very, very poor. It's expensive. There is no way that it can be scaled up to be a mass category, a bit like profit spread, right? So we've actually completed our first development of product in dips. I would say we are basically, you can expect that in quarter four, we'll enter the dips category, right? And it will be a great product, and I think you'll like it when you see it, okay? And great proposition, good margin for us, leveraging our current manufacturing capabilities, distribution capabilities, all in all, a great entry into the category. So that you can expect to see in quarter four. All right. And for cereals, we will expand and drive presence in the extruded cereal segment. This is where we have strength because, you know, we do have strength in bag snacks, and bag snacks, part of it is extruded as well, but it's bag snacks, it's about bag snacks. And as snacking becomes, as breakfast cereals, and you can read a lot about it even in the US, over time, cereals have moved towards snacking, right? Kellogg, I think, actually set up a cereal cafe in New York, right? Might be still there, right? And, that's the challenge that breakfast cereal companies in North America face, is that the category hasn't grown, and more people are consuming breakfast cereals but as snacks, right? And that plays perfectly into our hands because, you know, we have snacks category, we have some great breakfast cereal products, so we are in very, very good shape, right? From a supply chain and product availability standpoint. And we have the brand. Sundrop Pops is well accepted, is doing very well, and it's heading to being a nice, profitable business. We are leveraging our product superiority to gain share in the granola and muesli segment. Again, our product is great. Right, so if you look at it, granola and muesli is the yellow one, so that's about 500 crores, right? And which is of course smaller than cornflakes, which is the largest, which is 1600, and oats, which is 1300, but still is a decent size, right? And if we can have a reasonable share of this extruded and reasonable share of granola, then it's the 700-800 crore business that we are competing in, which we think we can grow. Over time, spend advertising money also, and it can be profitable. It is profitable from day one. We will evaluate an entry into cornflakes and oats only with clear strategic reasons. So discover unmet consumer need. Suppose we find there's an unmet consumer need, we find some competitive advantage, or we absolutely need it to support scale, right? We are not getting the scale in some commodities that we are buying, and if we do this, we'll get that scale. So until then, we have no plans to enter these categories. And obviously, we'll tell you upfront as and when we do it. So for now, our immediate plans in the next 12 months is just focus on extruded and focus on granola and muesli. And we'll be also having one or two more offerings in the extruded segment in quarter four. So you'll get a feel of that, and we'll share those with you in the January investor call. Okay. And lastly, chocolate confectionery market. I'm going to spend some time on this because I don't think really, most of you would be familiar with this. So just, you know, have patience with me, and I'll try and give you a perspective. So the total chocolate confectionery market valued at about 13,000 crores, right? The figure could vary 12 to 15,000, but it's in that ballpark. And the definition that the industry uses, and also industry means it depends on which country you are in, right? Molded is basically here means products like dairy milk, right? Or Hershey's milk chocolate, if you will, right? So those are molded. A lot of chocolates are molded and demolded, but these are just simple molded chocolates, right? So that's about 6,000 crores out of the 13,000 crores. Then count lines are things like Five Star, Kit Kat, it's a wafer chocolate, Munch, right? Perk. These are all count lines. Or if some of you remember, the Cadbury used to have a brand called Double Decker, or now Cadbury Fuse. Or even Snickers. Snickers would classify as a count line, right? And Bounty, which is not made in India, but would also classify as a count line, right? This is about close to 4,000 crores. And then the next in the order is toys. Toys is basically Ferrero Rocher, right? I think they probably have a 100% share of that for practical purposes, right? Cadbury does have some Easter eggs in other parts of the world, but they've never done that here. They have it in the UK. They have it in Australia. And so that's about 1400 crores. Again, repeat, these are at consumer prices, so take 70%, 65% of that, you'll get a 900 to 1000 crore turnover for Ferrero, which will probably stack up with the domestic sales as per the MCA filing. Then there is bags. Bags has been actually the fastest growing segment in chocolate. Not only in India, I think it's across the world, there in North America as well. It's about 1300 crores. This has grown at about 15 to 20%. And this is great because, you know, we have a lot of strength in bags, right? We use bags for all our bag snacks. We've got a large range of laminates that we use today to be able to protect our products, particularly popcorn, right? Which is very hygroscopic in nature. And when you add sugar to it, it's even more complex. So there's a lot of strengths that we have here. So when we intermix them, there's a lot of network effects that we get here. And assortments. Assortments means basically all the gift packs that you see, which is estimated about 700 crores. And you'll see gift packs of everybody. You'll see gift packs of Cadbury's, of Nestle, of Mars, of Hershey's. There are smaller companies like Sapphire, you'll see them. And it's an important market. It's not a market that one can ignore, but it's a tough market, right? And it has been tough for several decades. All right. At this point in time, we don't see an entry into the molded and the toy segment. The toy segment probably never, although one should never say never. The molded segment not for some time, because there is a way to enter the molded segment for us, but that needs some intermediate steps, if you will. Okay. A bit like we couldn't have gone from edible oils to chocolate spreads in one. It needed the intermediate step of peanut butter. But now the intermediate step is done, and chocolate spreads is much more viable for us. So not for now, at least. But you know, the rest of it is pretty large. Count lines is large. It's about 4,000 crores. And my guess would be that in count lines on a global basis, our current offering, the coconut one, would be at least 20% of that. It could be more, because it's one of the largest sellers in the UK, and Almond Joy, which is a comparable product in the US, is also, you'd find it's in the top five or top seven or top 10 products certainly in the US, and probably top three in the UK. And I'm not sure about Western Europe. So probably 20% probably comes, you know, so 800 crores. If Mars and all these other companies had been available in India, about 700 crores of that turnover would have come from Bounty. We have the, if you will, the bag. So we're certainly going to play in bag. We have good strengths in bag. We have a great product, and we're going to play there, and assortment. So we'll be competing, if you will, in 6,000 crores, about half of this portfolio in the foreseeable future. And as and when we develop competitive advantages in the other areas, we'll look at it. But this is large enough for us. And we now have the capabilities. We have the manufacturing capabilities. We also cracked more or less the supply chain side. And only thing is, there is some tweaking that we need to do. So once this tweaking is complete, we'll be ready to get to the firing start mark. Okay. So in summary, therefore, ADFL journey clearly at an inflection point. Gross margin from food now exceeds the gross margin from oils. We've had an historical CAGR of about 15% in the food business. Look at the last 10 years, and that's the number that you're going to get. 10% from ready-to-cook and 500 basis from peanut butter and ready-to-eat snacks. In FY20, we've seen the initial impact of sweet corn, chocolate spreads, and breakfast cereals. We've added about 500 basis points of growth. That's without chocolate. So in total, we're already up to 20. And then I think that our point is that once we get into these other categories, which is the next point, with sufficient growth levers in place, entry into dips, top end of pasta, noodles, and scaling up of chocolate confectionery, our organic growth rate should be able to get to that 25 to 30% now. And we are rapidly transforming into a profitable, diversified food company with a low dependence on edible oils. And you know, not what I call, you know, products where consumer sees and say, okay, per kilo. The consumers think about value, but we don't want them to think per kilo. The moment everything in your brand is about per kilo, then there is not much pricing power that is left. And significant competitive advantage in five distinct category groups. I would say out of the five, strong competitive advantage in four, right, in the each of those that you're playing on, probably the weakest of that lot is bag snacks. But that has a defined role to play, and as we get still, that will also be profitable. And with tremendous profitable growth. So I would say thank you again for your time. We remain committed and on track to become the best performing, the most respected food company in India. And thank you for all your help along the way. And with that, I'm going to ask Shafi, who's our moderator for the evening, to initiate the question. So Shafi, over to you.
No, actually, first I will take Mr. Paru Lasudani. Request you to unmute your mic and you can ask your question. Mr. Parul?
Hi, sir. Good evening.
Hi.
So my question is, there is a lot of potential in the coated almonds category in the chocolate segment, and there is not much competition also in that category. So why are you not entering in that category? And soups, sir, just one suggestion. There are a lot of soups in the market, but most of them are in the same kind of soup segments, like tomato, like mixed veg, like hot and sour. Not much of them offer different flavors, which are differentiated. So if we can look into that also in the future, like you suggested, that's all from my side.
Okay. So thank you, Parul. We'll take the second one as a suggestion. And on your question on almond, the answer is yes. I think almond is certainly on the radar because again we have competitive advantage, right? We've been producing almond butter, right? If you see our chocolate spread, it's about 10% almond, right? Almond paste, almond butter. So we've been producing almond butter. We make it in house, and we need to just refine our offering, right? So it's complex. It takes time, but there is an almond. I think Amul sells an almond chocolate, right? I think it's priced at about 25 rupees or something like that, right? And we've done work on it, so I think at some point in time it will certainly come. Okay, thank you for asking the question. A good point.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Biman Sampath, please unmute your mic and ask question.
You'll have to mute your line here, huh? Okay, thank you. Yeah, Bhavan, go ahead.
Biman? Mr. Biman?
Give him a 30 seconds. He'll be there.
Okay, now I'm taking next person. Manoj Dua, please unmute your mic and you can ask.
Am I audible?
Yeah. Yes, Manoj, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I was lucky enough to get a Diwali pack of yours, and in that there was peanut butter cup duo, and I find it very, very tasty and that. So anything about launching as a separately, like Reese or something?
Yeah. Okay. That's it, Manoj.
My second question is, can you throw some little bit more color on that your line that we are controlling the supply of the chocolate to get the more profit? I couldn't understand more how this controlling aspect of supply is helping us. That's it.
Thank you. So on your first question, yes, absolutely right. We put in some quantities of the peanut butter, which is like peanut butter chocolate, which is like Reese's, in the Diwali pack, just to understand what is the response, what is the feeling. Because we put a very limited amount of those boxes in. And yes, the answer is it will come, but there is a little more refinement that we need to do. We have done it with a dark chocolate, a milk chocolate. So marketing is just working on that. I suspect by the end of the year, that will also be ready. So you'll have a Reese's type of product. Yes, the answer is yes. As far as the chocolate is concerned, you see, what happens in the early days, because we set up our own manufacturing lines, right? And we also want to test. We want to ensure that we actually don't price ourselves outside the market, and B, we also need to work with some of the tooling that we've got. A lot of the tooling that we've actually bought is used equipment, right, on the chocolate line. Otherwise, it would have been a very expensive project for a company like us. So actually right now, if you look at it on a per piece, we don't make money on the chocolate. We're actually losing money, right? Because the pack size is very complex. It's got foil, it's got A, it's got B, it's got probably even higher weight than it should require. So we are in the process of checking it. So right now on this scale, because also we sell very little, in the short term, we'll actually lose money, right? So the investments that we may have to make in these categories will be much more, right? So that is why I said in the right now we will control, we'll get our act right, then when we're starting to be a profitable thing, starting next year, then boom, we will go for higher. Okay, it's not unusual in many of the categories that we've entered. We started off like this, and then gradually we built them up to be profitable.
Thank you, and the best of luck.
Thank you. Okay. Right,
Dhanil, please unmute your mic and listen.
Hi, Sachin. Good afternoon. Three questions. First one, you know, I think you mentioned somewhere that you think that coconut-based chocolates, you see, you know, fairly larger, you know, opportunity than peanut butter. But, you know, I mean, in that space, already Mars is there, you know, with Bounty. While in peanut butter, there is nobody, and peanut butter is, you know, fairly big in terms of acceptance. So why do you think that? If you can share your views, that is one. Second question is, you know, entering into pastas and noodles, and I know that, you know, you can only give a very limited information given the sensitivity, but just wanted to understand your thought process, because I mean, that's a segment which is dominated by large players. Others have tried to enter into this market, but that dominant player remains dominant. So, I mean, what is our thinking behind that? And last question is, you know, is on oil. You know, our gross margins, you know, on absolute terms is still around 100 crore, which is not a small number for our size. And, you know, if we look at our strategy in the past, we have been following a strategy whereby we want to maintain, you know, 100 kind of index without losing market share. But margin pressure is coming in. So is there a potential scenario possible where we continue to lose margin and we continue to lose volume as well, because we are not spending money behind A&P? And what is it that, you know, we are thinking for that kind of a scenario? So this are the three questions.
Good. Thank you. All very good questions. So the first one on coconut versus peanut butter. Yes, look, Reese's is, I think, either the largest or the second largest candy in the U.S., right? I'm not sure, but I think M&M's is first and Reese's is second, or vice versa, depending on what database that you look at, because we don't buy data, right? We look at it off the net, right? But you see, coconut acceptance is very high. Remember, we as a country eat a lot of coconut, right? We use coconut with prayers. Even when we eat a pan, we eat coconut with it, right? There's a little amount of desiccated coconut that is there. So coconut is a big part of our of our culture, if you will, right? And as a consequence of that, we feel the size of price of coconut is much more. Bounty can be an issue for us, provided they manufacture locally. But in that case, it's okay. They will spend some money on advertising, but they will also spend a lot of money on the plant, right? I don't remember the exact figure, but I remember when they set up the plant near Pune, the figure quoted was about $100 million. Now, $100 million means, you know, your depreciation bill alone will be $7 million, right? And these companies really struggle. They struggle on their P&Ls. You know, you should download their P&Ls from MCA and you see, you know, what are the losses to the extent of. So, I would say in chocolates, the big daddies are really Cadbury, and to an extent Nestle, but really Cadbury. Okay, far more agile and great products, etc. So long as we feel we have an effective strategy for competing with Cadbury, I think we are okay, right? And we are not intending to get into wafer chocolates in the near term, right? I would say, therefore, that is the reason why we feel the size of price of the coconut will be much more than the peanut butter, right? Even though competitive advantage-wise, we will be much more advantageous in peanut butter because we make the peanut butter.
Right.
The same thing will hold good for even a Snickers type of product. We make peanuts, we process peanuts, and therefore we are very, very agile. So, but I think our uniqueness will be the maximum in coconut. Could we sell a peanut chocolate? The answer is absolutely yes. Probably we will, right? But our competitive, our unmet consumer needs and right to win will not be as much in, in the case of peanut butter and peanuts. In peanut butter, because the peanut butter market itself is evolving, right? So it's a taste. It will take time for it to grow on people. And because remember, large part of current consumption is also as a protein substitute. So we have to take away that from a taste perspective. And peanut, Snickers type of chocolate certainly is, you know, we can do a good job of making it. Okay. On your second point, absolutely. We have no intention of taking on a Nestle and ITC on noodles and pasta. Absolutely not. We have no right to win versus them, and we certainly don't intend to go head on with them. So we will find in these larger categories those segments which we can grow. Then we have competitive advantage, right? And I'm not going to, obviously, as you said, I'm not going to talk more about what is our competitive advantage. But once we launch, you'll tend to understand where we are coming from. So, you know, bear with us. We'll wait for another 8 weeks or so, or maybe, I don't know, 12 weeks, whatever. But we'll be in a better position. Okay. And last is on oils. Yeah, see, the oils gross margin certainly has been a cause of worry, and it has declined over the last 4-5 years. We had said that our objective this year, one of the things that we do is we drop down the pricing so that we become competitive, so that even if we settle in at a lower level, not at 100 crores, but lower than 100 crores, we settle in at a level where there is kind of equilibrium. Okay. So I think we are getting to that equilibrium level now. I'm not sure. I'm not saying that we've got it completely, but I think we are getting to that equilibrium level, partly because the whole price table has gone up. So certainly our margin drivers, the top end of oil is all now in positive growth territory. So I think if we are close to it, I'm not saying that we are there, but I think we are getting close to it, so that it's not a baggage that we have to carry forward and deal with for the next, 5-10 years. It's something that is there. It's a part of our business. It's an important part of our business, but it also continues to grow, albeit at low single digit levels. And whatever the margin might be at that level, it's not becoming a drain on our resources. Okay. Because we need to be also able to invest behind our business and obviously deliver margin. Okay, thank you, Dhwanin, and appreciate the question. Very good questions, and Kavi, next question, please.
Kaustubh Bubna, please
unmute your line. Hi, Sachin, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Kaustubh, and you?
I'm great. So I basically had 3-4 questions. Mm-hmm. Should I just list all of them together?
Absolutely, partner, do that. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, great. So, firstly, could you provide us with the geographic split of your sales, so in India in itself, which are the main regions your sales, the main cities your sales comes from? Also, in this ready-to-eat business, I see a lot of competition is coming up even from, the healthy snacks startup companies, these startups are starting to sell Jowar snacks, a lot of gluten-free snacks. So what is our view on entering this type of a healthy snack segment? And also, could you give your view on this segment as competition is increasing? And the third question, how much peak sales could you do with your current capacity and distribution, let's say everything went well? And lastly, on the oil business, just wanted to understand, we are not investing in this edible oil business, right? And that's fine, it's understandable. But why don't we, what is the thought process behind reducing prices? So basically, at what levels can we reduce prices to have sustainable margins and prevent degrowth? Could you speak a little bit about that? So those are the
fair. Thank you. So all very good questions. On the geographical spread, I would say today for the core food business, which is the strategic part of it, all the regions are relatively in very, very good shape, meaning all are strong contributors, right? Whether it is north, west or south. East is the one which is always a little less, and that is driven more by per capita income, right? Looked at another way, however, might be more meaningful, not by geography, but by town, right? So probably a large part of our business is coming from about 400 odd towns, right? And we are expanding our town coverage, right? But I would say a very, very large part of it will come from this. And as we expand our town coverage, that is obviously where we also can get a lot more growth. But having said that, I would add even within these 400, 500 towns, there is still a lot of, scope for expansion. So that will include a Delhi, a Bombay, a Chennai, a Bangalore, whatever. Okay. In terms of ready-to-eat snacks, yes, there is always going to be new players and who will seek to establish themselves through innovation, right? So today it could be Jowar. Tomorrow, if you remember about 3 years ago, it was quinoa. Quinoa was very hot, right? And a lot of people would say, quinoa. There's some companies who actually focus entirely on that. But at the end of the day, these are trends, right? none of them have actually become scalable businesses, right? So the scalable businesses continue to be the mainline businesses, right? So which is, you know, still using corn and rice, because that's where the consumption game is, and that's also where you can get a lot more consumers, right? So certainly, why even snacks? Even if you look at breakfast cereals, there's a company called Soulful out of Bangalore, and you can actually take that data out from MCA, right? And you see what is the size of price. I think they've done a pretty good job in terms of product portfolio, right? But you tend to get, it's very small, and it's therefore very complex to manage, right? Especially as you want to build distribution to 400, half a million stores, right? So that is one of the reasons why nobody has ever scaled them up, right, or properly. In terms of peak capacity, certainly well north of 500 crores. And that's evident if you look at our data and our quarter two results, right? We didn't even sell. Our ready-to-eat snacks were actually down, right? And we were still clocking numbers, which was, you know, in the 100 odd crore range, right? So we are definitely, I think we have the capacities to do about 500. But importantly, without doing significant capital, we have the capability, I would say, to do 750 to 800 crores. So with some amount of capital, 750 to 800, and not that large or not that difficult to execute, if I may put it like that.
This 500 crores, you're talking purely food business, not oil, right?
No, only food business. Only food business. Okay. All the conversations are only food business.
I know. Yes.
You have to ask Percy about that, because I often ask him that question about oil and food. Then on the oil business, yes. So I think that was our intention in July when we said, we told you that, you know, look, we're going to drop our prices, and, you know, we think we can take a 8 to 10% premium versus competition and be able to grow our volume. And we did that. The prices did go up. So we moved back up, but fortunately competition has gone up. We still think about 8 to 10% premium versus competition in an unsupported manner is sustainable, right? So whatever level that margin settles down in, right, our objective also as a management team is that let it settle down there, and then, you know, we just keep growing the business. It may not be at 8 to 10%, it can grow at 3-4%, but we have that, the Damocles sword is no longer hanging over our heads, either from materiality, which is already down now, but even also from a trend perspective. So that all engines are chugging along well of us. Okay?
So if I could just, you know, understand this, at your current pricing, your overall oil basket, what are your gross margins, if you can give a number, and what?
Yeah. So I think,
if you reduce prices. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I would say the overall margin for the premium end of the Sundrop edible, not Sundrop, the total premium end, has probably down to 20%. It might even be down to 18-19%, right? Okay. Now, after that is a question of mix. How much volume do you have at the lower end? How much do you have at the top end? That's a choice. And that's also a choice that we are making, right? But let me put it, we'll move on to the next question, but I'll try and give you a simplistic answer. Inherent category margins in edible oils are probably in the region of 8 to 10%. Inherent category margins. Remember, I quoted the example of a brand in the US, right? Huh?
Yeah.
Category margins inherently are in that ballpark across the world. It's not just India. If we take an 8 to 10% premium on that, we're going to end up with an 18 to 20% margin.
Okay. From a category
perspective. Right? Uh-huh. Our margins have historically been higher because of pricing, right? Okay, so we would have gone north of 30%, 35%, right? But then it wasn't sustainable. That's why you saw the attrition both in volume and revenue and gross margin, right? Gross margin in the recent year. So that is why I think about high double digit is probably where this category is going to end up. So let's say, you know, in that ballpark. Did that answer your question, Kostas?
Yes, just one small point to this. I don't understand. It's just, if you could help me clarify, it's just better my understanding on this. You'll have a low market share versus your competitors, but you'll have price premium. How does that make sense?
It makes sense in the context of what we want to do with our company. Right? In other words, makes sense because that is how we have actually built this business. If you go back to a decade ago, we used to make about 60 crores, 70 crores of gross margin from oil, and we made zero on food or 3 crores on food, correct?
Correct.
That is where the company was a decade ago. Now, pull back to today, you are making that much oil margin and more, plus you are probably making a 100 crore margin on food.
Yes.
Right? Now, how did that 100 crore margin of food come about? Because you set up businesses and created businesses which are probably in the region of 350 crores with a gross margin of 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But how did you set up those that businesses? We didn't go and borrow money from anywhere, no? Right? So we took the portfolio that we had, we made as much money as we could, and we built a whole different business on the back of it. Now that that other business is large enough, what we'll now do is we'll see how much more flexibility we have on the edible oil business.
Fair enough.
Anyway,
thanks and great job on the foods business. Excellent to see. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you, Pastor. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, sorry, Chavi, you can just go to the next question.
Next, Mr. Dhruv, please unmute.
Dhruv, he's got a lovely pet there, as his image there. That makes everybody's day. Dhruv, very cute here. Okay, he's unmuted.
I do. We could not able to hear you anything. I think, sir, this is all people go now.
Okay, thanks a lot on the way. Oh, I can't read the whole thing. One sec, group, we're trying to read. Oh, mic is not working. Okay.
Yes, sent this some questions in this first thing. Group, 3-4 questions he has asked.
Okay, so has Dhruv sent in those questions already?
Yeah, it is there in the question and answer session.
Okay. Right, okay. Got it, Dhruv. Okay, thank you, partner. Good. So, yeah, the first question is when we go out walking to the shops or certain parts of Gujarat, we never see actual products or full basket of products in the same manner. On the one hand, we say we have decent distribution, but product availability is not there. Everybody can see this chat, huh?
No.
No, okay, only I can see it. Yeah. So I'll have to call it out. On the one hand, we say we have decent distribution, but still product availability is not there. Why is such a situation? When it be, let's say, Cadbury's penetration, 2 to 3 years or 7 to 8 years, some thoughts on it in terms of popcorn. Suddenly 47 and BC are trying hard and now available in stock. Will this harm benefit us? And what would you say is the penetration of popcorn will be? Where do you see it over the next 5 years? Okay. Got it. Thank you, Guru. So I think on the part of, distribution, yes, you will certainly find, and particularly in stores which are located in very good areas, right? So if you see a guy in Bandra, right, or you see, let us say, the club inside Bombay Gymkhana, right, they will be very high margin. They are location type of club, right, or NSCI even for that matter, right? And their objective is clear. They need to maximize their margin, right? After all, it's a location-based business, a bit like an airport, right? So this will always be there. Right. Of course, the stronger your share, the more your media weight, the more you will be, you know, the more it will be available. Right. So even Cadbury's had to work hard on distribution, and that was 30-40 years ago. Right. And it will happen, but it will just it takes its own time. Right. So you are seeing the Cadbury's distribution today after probably 80 years or something like that, and it obviously shouldn't take 80 years. It should take a lot less, but it will happen certainly. Right, as brands become more and more stronger and bigger, etc. In terms of popcorn, yes, I think this was a very logical point, which is, as all of you who are in the finance business would know also, I think PVR has done a lot of rounds in Bombay, and they were saying that they want to become bigger in popcorn because, the cinema hall business is obviously not doing so well. They're certainly doing that. They're not the first people, though. As you will recall, Inox had done that many years ago. And they exited after they lost. I'm not sure what the sum was, but probably 50, 60 crores. We'll also see how 4700 DC does. And, obviously any competitor, even if they sell one pack, is one pack less that we are going to sell. All right. The question is whether it is sustainable. The same holds good for, say, Unilever peanut butter. The same will hold good for PBR. And we will see. But so far, we've had obviously a lot of competitive entries in the last decade. Most of them have gone away. And of course, in the recent, we've had them also. Even Modi Naturals is trying to make some inroads. They've been trying for some time. And let's see how it goes. But I think we are in a, you know, overall, we are in a good shape. Right? What would you say is the penetration of popcorn ready to cook in India? It's very small. I mean, you know, we have a huge way to go. It's probably not even, you know, it's not even 10% of where it could be, right? And as we expand our distribution, we expand and we get our penetration up. That is how we intend to see growth, right? So certainly it will continue to grow. And you can use our current growth rate as a good example of how much it will grow. And I think, you know, you'll be off a couple of 100 basis points at best. Okay. In terms of ready-to-eat popcorn, the competition is very high. Absolutely. In fact, this is not just true for India. It is true across the world. As my colleague in Canada, Ian, says, you know, every corner store has its own ready-to-eat popcorn. Because there's not much capital required, right? You can just put up a little popper and you can, if you will, you know, pack it in a bag and sell it, right? So, you know, so it will always be a very competitive category, but we needed to play in it because, you know, it's popcorn and we need to understand it, and it has tremendous synergies and benefits from our perspective. And of course, the competitive scenario has changed a lot after that Bombay Appellate Court ruling on the GST. As you know, we always charge 18% GST, but most of our competitors were charging 12%, and I presume therefore depositing 12%. But the ruling was quite clear that it is 18%. And so we've seen actually a lot of people who actually toned down their aspirations from this category. But will it always remain more extremely competitive? The answer is yes. Why? Because there are very few barriers to entry, right? The more the barriers to entry, the more you, you know, the less competitive category. Thank you, Roop. I hope I've answered your questions and done a reasonable amount. So we are going to take Shafi another 14 minutes till 5 o'clock, correct? Right?
Yeah.
So Shafi, if you can call out the order, I can see some questions.
Mr. Bimal Sampath, earlier you are not there. Can you ask a question, Bimal? He has put this question in the last part, question and answer. He is online, but I don't think his mic is working on it.
We go to, there is Renu Gandhi and Ashwin D'Souza.
No, Renu Gandhi, I don't think she is in line now. She is not there.
So anybody else then?
Bimal Sampath is there. Bimal Sampath, last question. Two. So Bimal Sampath's mic is, I think, not working. He has put two questions there.
Yes, I can see that. So one question from Bimal is, please throw some light on premium popcorn as brand like 4700 BC. So I think that's a similar question to what Dhruv had asked. And what are our plans for Indian snacks? So our plans for Indian snacks, we are there in a limited assortment. We are intending to stay there because not from the viewpoint of growing the Indian snacks business, but there are going to be some snacks that I'll explain later as you see the portfolio develop over the next 12 months. There will be some snacks which we will be using for which we will also need to have an outlet, you know, where Indian snacks will play a role from a manufacturing perspective. So no plan on, if you will, growth or anything like that, because, you know, we've got enough growth drivers now and our bag snacks are done for the time being, but some use as a complementary product in our manufacturing side.
Then Mr. Ashish, please unmute your mic and you can ask.
Good evening, sir. This is Ashish Desai. Mm-hmm. Sir, we had a few questions, listing them together.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Just give me a second, sir.
My God, that sounds difficult.
The first question, the first question is, on the ready-to-cook popcorn side, 4700 BC, owned by PBR, has launched 60 grams popcorn at the cost of 30 rupees and tea seasoning. It's almost at the same price range we are also offering. The quality of product is also good. What are your thoughts on such competition when they're coming at the price points we are present? We always used to have this competitive advantage that at our costing and a multi-plant thing, it will be difficult for competition to come in. Second question is, a bigger company like HUL can operate at in a category like peanut butter at massive losses just to gain market share. They are spending inordinate amount of media spend, and they can continue doing that and also price the product much lower than us just to drive us out. How do we maintain our product in case they decide to go this route? Third question is, please share some color on the ready-to-eat business, especially nachos, in terms of winning back a position which you lost due to fire. And last question is that historically we were able to maintain our margins in the oil business. Under a new strategy on focusing volumes, we had a substantial margin fall in oil last quarter. So just a thought that should we go back to a previous strategy of preventing margins as growth is now coming from branded food business anyways?
Thank you, Ashish. Thank you all. Very good questions. So I think on this part about ready-to-cook popcorn, so this was just a similar question to what Dhruv had raised, right? And you will find various offerings of 4700 BC around. And, it is similar to what Inox had also done. Okay, they had come in at 15 rupees, 20 rupees. Actually, it is very difficult for anybody to, has been historically very difficult for anybody to come under us in terms of pricing. They can try and match, they can try and come close, but even that is also very difficult to sustain. And that is evident even with this launch, right? So, they've come in, even at the 10 rupee price, which is currently being discounted in stores like DMart and all, it is a lower grammage, right? It is about 30 grams, which is actually suboptimal from a consumer experience perspective. So, I would say, we should expect competition. After all, naturally, when somebody sees a business which is growing at 40-50%, a lot of people are going to say, hey, can I get a piece of that business? But it's not easy, right? So it's a bit like, let's say today we are in peanut butter. We say, oh, by the way, now people are looking at immunity, let me launch honey. Am I going to take share from Dabur? Not so easy, right? Because the consumer is inherently happy with Dabur. She's happy with the price she's getting at. She's happy with the brand that she's got. And she's happy with the overall offering. Why would she change to Sundrop honey? Answer is no way. All you'll do is you'll end up, you'll launch, and then, you'll spend a lot of money. So I would say the threat to us, the lack of opportunity, if we enter somebody else's domain with a parity product and parity pricing, is therefore both the threat and the opportunity are that, I would say, that way, that much diminished. Okay? And obviously, time will tell, but our experience tells us over the years, we've seen several competitors, and we'll see how these guys should do. The same logic applies to HUL, actually. If you look at the peanut butter pricing, actually, it's more expensive than us. The cashing is lower, but the price per kilo is high, right? And therefore, we are actually not too worried. Again, it comes down to, we know what price we process peanut butter at today in our plant, right? We sell a reasonable amount of peanut butter. Right, and therefore we have become reasonably efficient. We weren't this efficient 10 years ago. Okay, so I would say again, even a company like HUL, despite all its clout in the retail trade, right, I would say if they spend money, it should actually be good for us. And right now, the money that is being spent is in the four southern states. Of the four southern states, our readers, it will actually be most effective only in Tamil Nadu, because Tamil Nadu is the only one of the four states where the media you can buy easily and it's homogeneous, which is, it works for equally well for Chennai Metro as it does for upcountry Tamil Nadu, which is not the case, let's say, if you buy media in Karnataka or Telangana, where Hyderabad will behave differently from the rest of Telangana and Bangalore will behave differently from the rest of Karnataka. And actually, the Tamil Nadu TM business is actually doing quite well. So I would say it's okay. We should welcome competition. It's good for us, and not welcome as in cliched, we welcome competition, but it probably should be good for us. Let's see how it goes. Okay.
In this case, mm-hmm. my fear has been that what if the competition starts acting irrationally when they have deeper pockets? Right now, they are not acting irrationally. But since we are a smaller company, if the competition starts acting irrationally, then they can afford to have losses for a while, especially companies like HUL and all. That's the only thing.
Sure. So, I'll give you an example. About a year ago, if you remember, Marico had launched the peanut butter. And the same thing one of our directors said to me. He said, Sachin, but they have much deeper pockets than we have. So I said, yeah, that's true. But, you know, if we make a good quality product and we give reasonable value to the consumer, it's very difficult for anybody to take share from us. It's very difficult. If you are very premium priced, you have sought very high margins, then you are going to be vulnerable actually to this. Okay? If you are very premium priced, you are not only going to be vulnerable to this, you are going to be vulnerable to private label also.
Sure.
Right? A lot of our customers, even Ready to Eat popcorn, have tried, they've tried private label and it didn't work. I'll give you an example. We sell Ready to Eat popcorn at about 20 rupees for a pack of 50 grams. It's very good value. And you know, our supply chain is free. The private label, they've tried, they couldn't meet it. Right? So long as our margins are reasonable, obviously we want good margins, right? Huh? But, and you know, we make an aggregate, the kind of margin that we want to make, right? Which is about, you know, 45-50% at gross contribution, about 30-35% in terms of gross margin after manufacturing cost. I think they're okay. If we get very greedy on margin, then yes, Ashish, your point is that. Okay?
Got it, sir.
And last is on, yes. Tortilla chips, yes, the answer is on nachos, is that we certainly lost a lot of momentum after the Unnao fire, and it was visible in the results also, and we indicated that to you. With both these plants starting up, we are going to be in very, very good shape, and we intend to get a reasonably good growth and get back share. You're absolutely right on that. Okay? And on the margins on the oil business, this has been a subject of much debate for us. There is no easy answer on these, right? Because pricing is the most difficult one to judge, right? And, you know, we obviously have a food business. I think it's just that today, you see, what happened was that for the last 5-10 years, you know, this was the dominant part of our business. 85% of your gross margin comes from this business and, you know, your toast. I think those choices are going to be a lot easier for us now, right? Because the share of total gross margin, and let's see where it settles down post the pandemic, right? But it's no longer the dominant part of it. So I suspect those choices we'll make, and we'll make those choices. What you said is true, not only at a portfolio level, it's true at an SKU level. We may choose to make money on one, not make money on the other. These are choices that we'll make, right? And they were just going to have to be taken quarter by quarter, right? And that's the nature of it.
All right. Sure, thank you so much for wonderful answers.
Very good question. Thank you everybody for all the questions. I apologize if we couldn't take all your questions today. But what we can do is, you know, whenever we have the call next, we can just keep them in the, Jyoti will keep them in the list, and we'll take up all those questions first. Okay. So thank you again for taking out your time to join us. Have a great evening and look forward to talking to you in January. Cheers. Bye now. Thank you, Shafiq. Thank you, Jyoti.